In 1997, sanctions were imposed on Sierra Leone by the United Nations and the international community as part of a deliberate and determined effort to remove from power the AFRC junta, which had toppled President Tijang Kaba's democratically elected government. What was unusual about the sanctions was that they were backed up by a UK ban on humanitarian aid, and specifically food aid in the form of rice. Rice is very much loved by Sierra Leoneans, both rich and poor. I'm Robin White, and throughout the Sierra Leone War, I was editing the BBC World Service's daily current affairs programme, Focus on Africa. I remember the controversy over these sanctions at the time. I'm joined now by two people who took active parts in the sanctions debate in 1997. Peter Penfold, who as British High Commissioner took refuge in Conakry, Guinea, with the elected government of Sierra Leone, and was one of the most important people in the decision to include rice in the sanctions. And Margie Buchanan-Smith, who was emergency and policy head of the British NGO ActionAid and was one of the most outspoken opponents of food sanctions at the time. Before we go into the specifics of the sanctions in Sierra Leone, I'd like to start by asking both of you what your opinion is of sanctions in general. Are they effective? And in what circumstances are they justified? Let's start with you, Peter Penfold.
I think it's very difficult to look at all the various conflicts that we've sort of seen, certainly since the Second World War, and try and identify where sanctions specifically have actually sort of achieved what they set out to do. But that's not to say I think that sanctions should not be used. I think targeted sanctions for a specific, more limited purpose can often be a useful part of a process in trying to achieve what you're trying to achieve.
Margie Buchanan-Smith?
I think my concern around sanctions is to apply the sanctions in such a way that it's actually the political ruling leaders that you're really affecting and that you're really inflicting damage on them. And I think the concerns that I've always had around sanctions is whether in fact that they're hurting the poorest people in the country who may not even have elected those leaders. And how can you make sure that those people actually have access to the basic needs, basic food, whatever it is that they need to survive? And in implementing any sanctions regime, it's protecting those people that's important. And then it's a question of actually trying to make sanctions as tight, or as many people say now, going for smart sanctions that will really affect the people that you're trying to have an impact on.
What about in a country where most people agreed that there should be sanctions? I'm thinking of South Africa. Most black South Africans wanted sanctions.
Absolutely. But again, I think it's how can you make sure that people who are in real need are not being adversely affected? And I'm really talking here about lives being threatened, where you've got people who simply are struggling to survive and to meet their basic needs. I think that's where there has to be some exemptions to the sanctions to make sure that those people are not being adversely affected.
Let's turn to Sierra Leone specifically now, which is what we're here to talk about, where the main point of contention was over the inclusion in sanctions of humanitarian aid and rice in particular. In 2003, the Henri Dunant Centre for Humanitarian Dialogue, a respected organisation based in Geneva, was highly critical of Sierra Leone sanctions. This is what they said.
Based on the reasonable assumption that civilian lives that may otherwise have been saved were lost unnecessarily, this period stands as one of the most shameful episodes regarding international humanitarian action in modern times. Those encouraging the policy may well have been in breach of the Geneva Conventions through attempts to block humanitarian assistance from reaching a civilian population.
Peter Penfold, one of the most shameful episodes in humanitarian action. True or not?
No, I would not agree with that at all. I mean, first of all, I think we have to be specifically clear that the sanctions as such that were imposed by the United Nations, endorsed by the UK, were specifically related to three issues. One was the sanctions against arms and ammunition, the second was against petroleum products, and the third was a travel ban. Where the humanitarian aid came in was an aid policy decision taken by the British government that they would cease all British aid to Sierra Leone until such time as the constitutionally elected government was restored. And that decision included the funding that was going to NGOs and NGOs that were providing humanitarian assistance.
Did you yourself back that from the very beginning?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. The other point about the Henri Dunant point that I would certainly argue was that I think First of all, it was very difficult to have a precise picture of exactly what was going on. But I would argue very strongly that far many more lives were being lost because of the continuing presence of the junta and the activities of the junta and the RUF than the fact that humanitarian aid was not going into the country.
You wouldn't agree with that?
What I wouldn't agree with is that humanitarian aid should be withheld as part of this withholding of all aid, because that actually contravenes basic humanitarian principles. Basic humanitarian principles which state that all humanitarian aid should be provided on the basis of impartiality. In other words, regardless of race, creed, also regardless of any political or religious standpoint.
How hard did you fight the British government at the time?
Well, in our view, we fought the British government pretty hard.
But you lost.
Well, we didn't manage to reverse that particular policy decision at that time, but we did notice a softening of that position later on, and we would like to think that it did have an impact on the British government's policy, in particular the Department for International Development's policy on humanitarian aid.
Did you have angry arguments with them?
Yes, I think it'd be fair to say we did have some angry arguments with them, yeah.
Storming out?
No, we didn't storm out.
Shouting.
No, we carried on talking. But we held very different points of view. We met with DFID officials, and we also presented our evidence to the International Development Select Committee in the House of Commons.
Most people in Sierra Leone, as far as we can tell, disagreed with you. Here's Davidson Kouyaté, a leading civil rights activist at the time.
What benefits actually would there be with humanitarian aid? And besides, who would have guaranteed that with humanitarian aid in this country, the junta was not going to use it to their benefit? So for us, we thought that humanitarian aid of whatever kind would have added to the misery, you know, that was prevalent at the time.
Would you like to comment on that?
How can we ever know whether the majority of Sierra Leoneans thought that humanitarian aid shouldn't be provided? We were getting feedback from some local communities that actually they did feel that relief aid should continue to be provided. I think we completely understood the concerns that humanitarian aid might be abused and might be siphoned off. And certainly we did not want humanitarian aid to be used in that way. So we did not want the military junta using humanitarian aid for their own political or military purposes.
Wouldn't they have inevitably have done that?
Well, no. You see, that's where we felt it was possible to provide humanitarian aid in ways that would reach the people who really needed it. And indeed, if you look around many different countries in Africa, that's the challenge that's facing humanitarian agencies all over the place, whether it's South Sudan, whether it's Liberia, whether it's been Somalia. And it's not to say that we're always 100% successful, but actually, if you start to say our fear of that aid being abused means that we simply can't provide it at all, then you've actually given up before you've even started.
Yes, but how much stealing by the military junta would have been successful? If they'd just stolen half of it, would that have been acceptable?
Oh, no, I don't think that would have been acceptable. I think that would have been would have been far too much. And I wouldn't.
And what proportion of theft would have been acceptable?
I don't think I would look at it in that way. I think the way I would look at it is, in what way can we provide humanitarian aid that ensures it's most likely to reach the people who need it? And to give you an example of that, because just prior to this whole period that we're talking about, aid agencies had had their fingers burnt in Liberia, where there'd been tremendous looting of aid vehicles, relief aid, etc. In response to that, agencies had realised that what they needed to do was, in a sense, go for a minimal approach to providing humanitarian assistance. So, for instance, rather than providing food aid in bulk, which is inevitably a valuable resource, you'd go for wet feeding centres where you can be sure you know who's actually receiving the food. I'm not saying that would be impossible across all of Sierra Leone, but I'm saying by using strategies like that, you can minimise the likelihood of the food or whatever the relief resources are being siphoned off, and you can maximise the likelihood that it gets to the people who need it.